Welcome back to episode 197 of Tall Boy Radio. The more astute of you will know that I said that last week as well. Last week I was wrong. This week I am right. I am right for sure, I think. So it's Halloween. We hope you're all having a wonderful evening. Plenty of treats and not too many tricks. We're hopefully going to add to that mix. So Gaz is going to tell us where the show goes when the beer flows.
Who knows where the show goes when the beer flows, as is Adam's famous comment. Evening the world. I'm looking forward to this. I'm not going to give too much away about what we're going to be talking about tonight. Plenty of left turns along the way, no doubt. But as always, really looking forward to entertaining you guys out there.
Indeed, indeed. And we are joined as well by our esteemed colleague, Dave.
Welcome all. It's great to be on episode 197 and a half. Really looking forward to it.
That's it. Can you tell we've had a little bit of a break for a week or so? Just a little. So tonight, anyway, we're going to be talking about a cashless society. It seems to me that, you know, that's the way that society is heading, that cash is no longer king. And we're going to be looking at how that could potentially affect us. We'll look at places like China and the social credit score and things like that and how that's working for them out there, if indeed it is classed as working. And we will apologize for any background noise you do hear, if you do hear any trick or treats, because like we said, it is Halloween. So we're going to kick it off by just playing a little video that I picked up on Instagram, and it's talking about the dangers that, you know, some of the dangers that we could be facing if we got word to get rid of cash.
Me and you watched this video. This was a gentleman riding one of those motorized scooters, and the time was up, so they cut the bike off. So, boom, he went down. And you laughed when you first saw it, right? So I laughed, and I was like, ha-ha, that's funny. America's Funniest Home Videos. Then I got a little scared and skeptical, and I started thinking, if they can remotely cut off a bike while you ride it and stuff like that happens, what happens if I have an electric car that's connected to satellites and stuff? Could that be cut off? Then I start really thinking. I went down a rabbit hole that I haven't got out of since about 8 a.m. this morning, because then I start thinking, what if I'm using my debit card and they don't want me to use my debit card? And I don't even know who the hell they is, but I go into the store with a grocery buggy full of stuff and then they cut that off. And everything that's electrical, your AC, they cut that off. Your communication with your friends and your family, they cut that off. Then I start realizing we too dependent on damn technology. Like, instead of going to rent a bike that drives for you, just get a bike that pedals. Instead of using the telephone to solely communicate with my friends and family that are close to me, go see them in person. Instead of depending on my credit card to do everything, start to barter and trade. Because this is actually scary as hell.
So that's one aspect of it. Dave, you run a business. I don't know how much cash is handed over in what you do. I imagine it's all electronic. Do you ever have cash on you, by the way, Dave, just out of interest?
You're right. In business, no. I can't remember the last time cash had anything to do with our business. We do post checks out occasionally, and that's about as close to cash as we get. Personally, I quite often don't have cash, but if I'm going somewhere specific, like out to a town or a place, I will always have 10 or 20 quid in my wallet just in case.
Yeah, interesting. What about you, Gazza?
Yeah, similar to Dave, really. We were sort of talking just before we went live, and I genuinely don't really remember the last time I carried like loads of cash on me, in particular coins. You know, as Dave said, you know, you might carry, you know, perhaps a 10, 15 quid in notes or whatever, but yeah, just cards and phone. Obviously now with Apple Pay and everything else and all the sorts of other stuff you can do on your phone, you know, you don't need cash really. And I know we're going to get into the wherefores and what fors in terms of should we be using cash, but no, not huge. And it's weird because I was saying to Adam, you know, last week we went to see Amy, my daughter, she's away at uni, and I had literally a pocket full of cash. Can't remember why I had it. I think I'd taken some notes out of the cash machine and just bought something. I had loads of coins. I had about 14, 15 quid worth of coins, which back in the day was like, woo, I'm rich sort of thing. Whereas now it's like just an inconvenience. Like your wallet's dead bulky. And I went into Costa, so right, can I have some coffees? So there were three of us, bought these coffees. And it actually genuinely felt like much better. The fact that I didn't have like loads of cash and coins on me, which is weird. And I don't know whether it was the fact that I had loads of coins, and it's just an inconvenience because of the bulk of the wallet or what, I don't know, but I just couldn't wait to get rid of it. It's weird. I very, very, very rarely carry cash at all.
No, it's interesting. And same as yourself, I genuinely can't remember the last time I had any cash on me. I literally never carry cash. But then you got this gentleman there at the start who's sharing his story, or his fears rather, that a cashless society would be a lot easier to control electronically. Is he right? Is he a sensationalist? What are your thoughts on this matter, guys?
I think he's probably right. I mean, it begs the question, if you are going to use cash, where initially do you get the cash from? Because then if you're going to use cash, do you then have to go to a cash machine, which is an electronic device that then gives you the cash? So I suppose, you know, it's a catch 22. He's wanting everybody to use cash, but where do you get cash from in the first place? You know, there's no, unless you physically went into a bank and then there was some ID check and you're able to withdraw cash and they give you cash like 20, 30, 40 years ago, whatever. But, you know, with the amount of branches closing down and this, that becomes a bit harder. So it does beg the question as to where you would get your cash from in the first place. But he's right. I think we without cash, with everybody using cards, there's obviously an electronic marker, there's a trace, there's all sorts that go on. They would be able to track your transactions much easier. Mm. And then I suppose if you went down the rabbit hole that I think he was going down, I think if they can track your transactions a lot easier, they can probably manipulate your transactions a lot easier. So, yeah, I think it's possible. Maybe not. We're obviously not at that point yet. Maybe not sensationalism yet. But I think he's probably got a point.
Yeah, I think you do as well too, because like you say, in terms of actually physically getting your hands on cash, that in itself has become an electronic transaction. Because the chances of getting to a bank that's actually open, certainly during the hours that you need it to be open, is an absolute nightmare. It's an absolute ball ache trying to get any cash out. Not that I ever do, if I'm really honest, but the actual having to use a physical branch, you don't, you know. On the occasion where I was using a curry house on the weekend, which is cash only, you know. I'd be interested to find out the philosophy on that. We have tried to get the guy on who runs it, so maybe we will. But yeah, I had to, you know, I'd completely forgotten how to run over the road and use a cash machine to get the money out to pay for it. What are your thoughts, Dave?
I think if you went right back to your own individual circumstance and just think of yourself, are you at all inconvenienced with having to carry a card or a phone rather than cash? You know, if you knew for certain that you would never need cash anywhere you went, like that restaurant or that ice cream van in the park that you just happened to see, and actually they only still take cash, which is one of the reasons you carry a tenner with you when you go out for a walk in the park, just in case you need ice cream, obviously. If you could guarantee you would never need cash in every single transaction you could make with a credit or debit card, then I think, and especially when you can use your phone now, I don't think I would miss it one bit, because why would you? You don't gain anything by using money. You don't lose anything. Just in terms of that exchange, you don't lose anything by using the card. But then you get into where that video was going. You get into what are the implications of that. And that's a whole conversation. But then some people use cash. That restaurant uses cash. A lot of builders like to be paid in cash. I wouldn't like to speculate why. None of my builders did. They were all bank transfers. But occasionally you hear builders, I don't know, the price is cheaper if you're paying cash. I've no idea why. But there is a whole economy that still exists based around cash. But is that if that particular aspect may just be perhaps avoiding a bit of tax? I'm sure there's other reasons why people still want to use cash other than just avoiding tax.
I know the argument, you know, in terms of your high street local store and you know, cash is king, because if you walk in with a £50 note and you purchase something for £50 and use a £50 note, the whole of that value is used for that transaction. If you spend £50 on a card, actually the shop owner has to then pay a charge for using the card, which is, I don't know, why it's 2%, 3%, whatever it is. I don't know what it is.
I can give you some insight on that if you want, Gaz.
Yeah, go on.
It varies, essentially. So generally, we do millions of pounds of transactions every year, and you tend to have a flat fee per transaction, which could be anywhere from 10 to 30p. So every single transaction, you pay that as a flat fee. Some providers will then charge you another fee if you want to do anti-fraud checks on it. That could be another 10, 20p. then you'll pay a transaction fee, which is a percentage, and it could be as low as 0.7, but it could be 2-3%. And then you pay an interchange fee for MasterCard and Visa because they want their bit as well. So you add all of that up, and you're quite right. It could be 2-3% of the whole transaction just going to facilitate that transaction.
And obviously then the knock-on effect to that is that that purchase of £50 effectively isn't now £50, it's now £47.90 or whatever. And then if then somebody else uses a card, then the value decreases each time because the bank takes a certain chunk each time. Whereas if you used cash, you know, I pay for something with a £50 note, that shop owner then pays for something with a £50 note, that £50 still holds its value, and he can still use a whole of that £50 in order to purchase something else. And I get that argument. I just don't see cash ever really being used significantly again. I mean, I genuinely get, well, I think we'll get to the point where you won't even have it on your phone and you won't even have it in a wallet. It'll be bloody barcoded into a microchip that you've got in your wrist or your finger or something, and you'll just scan it, and it'll just, and you'll have a credit system, and it'll just automatically come off your account. You won't have a device. That's my personal opinion. I mean, we're a long way off that yet, but you know, I do think that's coming, is that if you can do it in the ether, you know, you'll get to a point where, you go down that whole different rabbit hole of, well, do you allow yourself to be microchipped, which means that you can use that as a transaction and so on. But I don't know. I just don't see cash ever coming back and being used significantly again.
No, it's funny. I don't either. And I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with it. But at the same time, I'm probably acquiescing my way into that system as well as I go along with it. Like I says, you know, if you think about it, if, you know, say for example, that £50, you know, by the end of that 3%, and then like you say, they buy their stuff from their suppliers, supplier buy the stuff to make their stuff each time, and eventually, well, the bank's had the full share of that £50, but unless you're paying in cash, they don't get it because you're not paying for that transactional fee to, you know, to be processed. And it just concerns me that these banks probably, I think they do okay, is my understanding of them. The you don't see bankers struggling too much when they're at the top of the tree. And that concerns me a little bit, especially, you know, when they're in cahoots with the politicians and they get bailed out when they woke up like they did a few years ago.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, we've opened up two or three lines of inquiry already, and you could talk about who, you know, who runs the country. Is it the politicians, or is it big business? And there's an argument for possibly both. I just think without using cash, you know, the smaller shop owners in particular, they sell goods worth £50. And if you pay for it in a card, they're actually not getting £50 back for their transaction of those goods that are worth £50. Because they give them to you for £50 and they accept your £50, but then they've got to pay £2 in charges. So actually they're selling £50 worth of goods and actually only receiving £48 for it.
Yeah.
And ad infinitum. And at some point you get to a point where, well, actually, you know, it's going to drive, and it is driving small businesses out of business. And is that right? I don't know. I'd be amazed if any of the banks stood up and went, well, actually, we're not going to charge a transaction fee. I think you'd get a lot of people going to that bank and using that bank, but I just don't see that happening either.
No. Well, on that point, just I've got a point on that no transaction fee, but there's also something called Amazon One, which is a scanner that scans your palm, and you make a payment just by scanning your palm. You just talked to me about a microchip in your hand. You don't need that. It scans your palm. You just wave your hand over it, and it takes payment.
So that's been around for a while. Yeah, and I know you've got touchless technology, and you've got various reading devices, scanning devices, and obviously you're talking a lot about biometrics now. So you're looking at facial recognition, you're looking at fingerprinting, and all that sort of stuff, voice recognition. I just don't think down the line you will have a device that you will need to pay for your purchases. And you know, I didn't realize that was actually. I mean, obviously conceptually, I knew that they were working on things, but I didn't actually realize it was out there.
Yeah, and also in terms of payments, online payments, you can do bank-to-bank payments, which bypasses basically the payment gateways. So there's no processing fees behind the scenes. It's just using the current bank's system. You know, like if you send money from your bank to Adam's bank, or vice versa, it's free. And you can do that through technology, and that, and more is appearing within websites and online to eliminate those charges. I mean, you still have to pay the company that facilitates the bank-to-bank payment, but it's a lot cheaper than going through a traditional credit or debit card route.
So is this something that you think will, I mean, you've just said there that more and more of these are starting to sort of pop up. At what point then do you think that the big banks will get together and think, oh, hold on a minute, that's a little bit of a threat to our ongoing commercial success, so we're going to have to do something about it?
I think there's for a start, it only really works with online payments, because you need to link your bank to, you need to basically authenticate yourself with your bank to allow bank-to-bank transfers with the end retailer. So yeah. I think in terms of, you know, just going down the high street, popping into a pub or a restaurant, you're always going to just pay, well, not always, but, you know, for now, you're just going to pay on your card. So I don't think it's something that overnight is just going to wipe out traditional Visa and credit card payments online. But we're seeing in our sector, and just generally, that more and more organizations are choosing to allow you to bank-to-bank transfer, because the retailer is saving money because they don't have those charges quite often. And also it totally eliminates fraud, because it's bank-to-bank transfer, so it's you've stolen credit cards and things like that. So you might find retailers or online services that you get something extra, or you get it cheaper if you choose as a consumer to use bank-to-bank.
So I totally get that. At what point then, and I suppose go back to what I said a minute ago, at what point then do your big banks, and, you know, we won't name them, but, you're very, very well known, high street, very, very successful international behemoths of companies, when do they start to see this as a threat to them? And A, what do they do? And I'm not talking it illegal stuff or illegality or anything like that. I'm not going to talk about anything underhand, but what can they do? Or do you see a point where, and again, maybe another slightly darker conversation, but do you see the dark arts of business, and do they start to, I don't know, run roughshod over these smaller companies? I don't know, you know, what would stop, or what would encourage the banks to do that? I suppose at what point do they become threatened by these transactions?
Well, I think payment gateways, which is generally the middleman between you and the retailer, they're not necessarily operated by banks. So the companies that are charging you that 10p transaction and that 0.75% or whatever it is, that's not the bank. That's, you know, middleware. I mean, PayPal do it, Sage do it, and there's loads of companies that do it. So that's not directly the banks. Behind the scenes, you have got Visa and MasterCard that do always charge, so they are losing out on bank-to-bank transfers. I mean, I guess it's like anything. There'll be a tipping point where the banks are losing enough that it's worth them investing in that as a business model and doing it themselves, because they still make money. The companies running the bank-to-bank still have to charge. Yeah. I guess, like anything, there'll be a tipping point when they'll do their own. Or they may just decide they make enough money from huge amounts of transactions around the world, billions of transactions around the world, that if they lose a few million to bank to bank, it's neither here or there.
No, it's probably not, but my perception of bankers is they tend to like to get their fingers on any little bits of pennies that are available. So this gentleman then at the start, obviously he was sharing some what, you know, could potentially sound like far-fetched ideas about how our money and our electrics could be controlled. But then you hear from Dave that Amazon are already letting you scan palms and what have you to purchase. I mean, it doesn't seem to me that the future is necessarily that far away. Now, we won't, like I said, you won't name banks, but just in terms of control, it's not so many moons ago, and I'm not a big fan of the fella, but NatWest closed Nigel Farage's account and said that he couldn't bank with them. What did you guys make of that?
I don't remember the specifics as to why they said that, but I suppose if it was if you were in the boardroom, I suspect they might turn around and say it's a business decision, it's a commercial decision, we don't want to be associated with, and I don't know, and before Nigel Farage, who might be listening, sues the ass off us, I'm not suggesting he has done anything or he hasn't done anything, but I suppose at some point they would have made a commercial decision to say that by allowing him to continue to bank with us would be detrimental to us from a commercial model, and therefore we're going to make the decision for him not to bank with us. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, you're not a million miles away, to be fair, because that's exactly how they justified it as a business decision, that they didn't align themselves with the thing that this gentleman aligned himself with, his political beliefs and the things that he stood for. Neither do I, to be fair. Neither do I. I don't particularly care for the bloke. I don't really agree with his politics. That said, I didn't know he banked with NatWest. I don't think he publicised it. I don't think he went around waving his bank card around while he's drinking his 16 pints or whatever he claims to drink in the pub. You know, I'm not sure I'm comfortable. At the end of the day, this guy was a customer. He pays his transactional fees when he uses his card. I've no doubt that he brings a fair bit of business in. I don't know how much money he had with them, but I'm sure they earned a little bit of interest off of what money he put in there. I don't doubt it for one second. But I don't know that I'm comfortable with the idea that they can make that decision based on they don't like his political beliefs. They might not like mine. You know, well, I mean, don't get me wrong, our platform is smaller than Mr. Farage's, but
we're not right-wing fascist racists either, so...
I'm not. I mean, that's very clear, folks. Anybody's just tuned in now.
just sit on the face, hey. You know, just make sure you don't say anything.
Luke, for all his eloquent explanations of why he's not a racist, and despite his own marital situation, his own background, he clearly doesn't like foreign people coming to this country. And you could say that's racist, you could say that's xenophobic, you could say that's just some form of protectionism for the UK, but it's deeply unpleasant. And the people that follow him, irrespective of the words that come out of his mouth, hold even more extreme views than him. And Coutts, the bank that the branch of NatWest, which is a for people that only have a shed load of money, they didn't want to be associated with him. And the question is a bank, should we deem a bank like our electric supplier or our water supplier, where we have a right to that and they are not allowed to cut that off apart from very extreme situations? Or is there enough banks out there that, like any business, that can refuse to serve you apart from, through protective characteristic reasons, your race, colour, gender, things like that? But if they don't want to serve you, they don't have to serve you, as long as they're not discriminating. But again, why can't the bank say that?
And I, in a way, I agree. But then, whilst we might not bring the level of press that surrounded Mr. Farage, are we saying then that it's within the bank's rights as somebody that's providing us a service to ask us what our political views are, to ask us what our views on immigration is, to ask us what our views on the LGBTQ plus community, etc., etc.? And if we were to express certain views on certain topics and say, well, actually, no, we don't like that, and therefore, effectively, they're restricting your options. And I know they might have done it for Mr. Farage, and he is more of a figure who is in, I say the limelight, even if that's the right phrase for him. He's more well-known than we are, but You take that to the nth degree, and are we saying then, as you said, Dave, are we saying that banks either should or shouldn't be allowed to ask what our political views and opinions are in providing our services because they don't want to be associated with people that have certain views and opinions? I don't know.
And the thing is, he can be a customer of NatWest, and NatWest don't stand for those vile things that you've just stated there that Mr. Farage does stand for. And, I wouldn't dispute any of those things that you said. I'm also not going to endorse them just in case they do come after us. But nonetheless, I don't know that NatWest has the right to make the decision based on that. Yeah, I get what you say. Everybody has the right to serve somebody as a customer, and it's ultimately their decision to choose. Apart from, obviously, like you say, in terms of protected characteristics. If anybody's familiar with employment law as well, we'll know exactly what they are. And, I get it. You certainly shouldn't be prejudiced on those. Definitely not. But I just wonder whether that sits particularly well with me, or whether that is some of the foreshadowing of what we're talking about in terms of, well, if you don't agree with us, you can't bank with us. Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line?
Well, where do you draw the line with any retailer, effectively? Because if you're going down banks, then, as Dave said, do you go down the routes of, and I know Dave said there were some protected industries in terms of gas, electric, water, that sort of thing, but, you know, do you draw the line when you go down to the local pub and you walk in and you say, can I have, a pint of lager and a packet of crisps, please? And they say, well, what are your political views and opinions? And if you believe in this, then do you have... And it sounds stupid and, you know, and it wouldn't be this way. But, you know, do you have a questionnaire? Well, do you believe in... Da, 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 da. And if you answer to yes to any of these, sorry, we can't serve you.
Yeah.
And I know that that's taking it to the nth degree, but that's what we're talking about.
Mm.
We're talking about companies. And I know it happens and it's not right, but certain companies will refuse certain people the right to access to their company based on political views or views on immigration or views on LGBTQ plus or whatever it may be.
Mm.
And I don't agree with that. I know it happens at the moment because we just mentioned one case with the bank and Mr. Fry. So I know it happens and there'll be cases about it all over the world. But then I don't think I also agree with the fact that everybody should have access, because ultimately it's a business. And as a business, you own that business, and therefore you have the right to refuse anybody service. It's a tough question for me because I don't know where I sit, because either way, you turn around and say, okay, shouldn't NatWest allow anybody anywhere in the world, irrespective of what they've done, their background, their beliefs, their thoughts, their opinions, to have access to their services? I don't think I agree with that. But similarly, do I agree that they should be allowed to ask everybody all of those questions? I don't agree with that either. So... I don't know.
Yeah, it's not quite as cut and dry as when we first asked the questions. And it goes back to the simple question that we asked at the start, is do you carry cash? We've all said there's a pretty good reason why you should carry cash, and yet, for the most part, we don't. Yeah. So again, it's not quite as cut and dry. So I'll give you another example of control. And again, it's another contentious issue. So we're going to handle it as carefully as we can. We'll put our protective gloves on. We're talking about Russell Brand. So obviously Russell Brand has had some allegations leveled against him in the press recently. Now, I'm not going to stand on the fence and say whether he's guilty or not, because let's face it, that decision has been made and it's not for me to make. It's not trial by social media. It's trial in a court of law. And, you know, by all accounts, it will go to the courts. And we'll see what happens with that. But it's for the courts there to find him guilty. But prior to that, obviously, he is a relatively successful comedian. He has a YouTube channel, which was earning him a nice little income. He has a Rumble channel, which earns him an income. Now, the government requested that his income were to cease, that YouTube were no longer going to pay him. And YouTube agreed. So this is a man who's not been found guilty. He has had some serious accusations leveled against him. And I don't mean serious. I don't know the exact nature of them. Yeah. I don't want to know the exact nature of them, truth be told. I think sometimes these things, I'd rather not know, because it's a disturbing world out there. I don't really like what goes on sometimes. But I don't know. Again, I just feel in terms of our justice system, you know, there is an idea that you are innocent until proven guilty, that we shouldn't be stopping this man's right to earn, you know. And the other thing that troubles me most about it all is it was described as a well-known secret. So in terms of the industry, his behavior has been well-known for some time. So in other words, the media are well aware of his behavior, but only does this become an issue when he shares stories about the media and the corrupt and the nature of their bias. Then it becomes an issue with them. And that makes me uncomfortable. So there's a couple of issues there. But just go to the first one. What's your take on that? And his income is stopped from YouTube. Rumble, to be fair, have stood up and said no. So they're now going after Rumble, you know, in terms of ceasing the way that they operate, because they want to be able to control that as well. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, when you say the government asked them, I mean the government can't instruct any business to do anything. They can't force nope. them to do anything. The government doesn't have that power. What the government can and, of course, always does do is jump on the social media and the popular mainstream media bandwagon to, you know, very quickly sense the mood and get on the side of the majority. So So when they start to hear the rumblings in the media saying this is disgraceful, this man shouldn't be earning money, he's despicable, take him offline, the government is going to come out and say they should take him offline. And then the social media company probably does what it was going to do anyway, because they follow the same basics. They go with the majority because they want to upset the smallest number of people, and did it anyway. So I think it's correlation, not causation. But when you come to, should you immediately stop things before you've been to court, I think there's shades of grey in this one, because if you had a lot of witnesses seeing somebody stab somebody in the street, start a fight and stab somebody, they haven't been found guilty yet, but it's pretty obvious that that person's done it, and therefore they shouldn't have freedoms and liberties that just because they haven't been found guilty yet. So there is a line somewhere, and it's a difficult one to balance.
Yeah, it's a fair point. He's not in custody, though.
No.
So it's worth saying he's not been taken to custody for, as far as I know, even questioned about it.
The issue that I have on the Russell Brand and many other celebrity cases, unfortunately, we live in a society now where it is trial by social media, and actually you are guilty until proven innocent. And that's an awful thing for me to say, but people on social media will make up their mind and they will run stories, and people will have opinions of this person swayed either way. And even if it went to court, and as you said, Adam, I don't even know whether he's been subpoenaed into court yet or charged or anything, but I'm sure that obviously the investigation is ongoing and he probably will be at some point. But even if he went to court and he was found innocent, I still think the majority of people out there wouldn't give two shits what the court said, because in their own mind, because of what they've read and heard on social media, he's guilty and he'll always be guilty, and you can never, leopard won't change his spots and this, that and the other. And even if the court ruling came out and said he was innocent and he was absolved of all charges and she made it up or they made it up or whatever the charges are against him, I genuinely don't think that would sway many people's opinions. They would say, oh, they got the jury, or the courts are biased, or this or that, or he's paid a lawyer off, or something's gone on underhanded. And unfortunately, I think we are in a society now where you are guilty until proven innocent. And actually, even at that point, when you are proven innocent, that still might not be enough. Because ultimately, his career's down the pan. So what's happened is that you imagine tomorrow, all of the charges against him were dropped. Everybody that has made a claim against him, made a case against him, came out and said, I made it all up. There's absolutely nothing that he's done wrong. Nobody's going to employ him again. He's not going to find his income streams again because of effectively the reputation that he's got. So he is guilty and proven innocent. And even then, it still might not be enough for him to earn a life. And don't get me wrong, if he's done the things that are alleged, I mean, I don't know what they are, but again, you read that they are very serious. And if he has done them, then, you know, the justice system should prevail and he should face the consequences for that. But if he isn't found guilty, he's almost guilty anyway, isn't he? Because of what people's thoughts and opinions are. If I asked you now, do you think he's guilty, yes or no?
Do I think he's guilty? No.
Why?
There's enough people that have come out and said, look, you know, the media have been contacting us and said, can you give us dirt on Russell because we knew you had sex with him? And they said, no, it was consensual, you know what I mean? And there's a number of people that have said this. And now, it's a tough one. You've asked me, do I think, without truthfully knowing whether he has or what he's done entirely, I do think there is the distinct possibility that digging up dirt on a man who was addicted to sex, who was addicted to drugs, who was addicted to alcohol, probably isn't that hard of a job, and it was going to come out eventually anyway, if indeed he has done anything wrong. However, it's the timing of it that bothers me. That's the timing of it that bothers me. That if it was a secret that was well known within the public eye and these celebrities who are now dogging on him and saying, we always knew he was a bad man.
Why now?
Yeah. Why now, when he's sharing stories about media bias, about government bias, and about, you know, media control and manipulation of stories, all of a sudden is he captain unpopular, especially when we still don't know the Epstein client list?
because, well, I mean, that's a whole different podcast and one that potentially would be libelous. So we might not necessarily.
There's no potential about it.
I don't think we should go down that route. But I think that the government and the papers have huge budgets for, I say propaganda, but for smear campaigns. And if people are throwing mud at them, they are more than prepared to spend the big bucks to dig something up about somebody else and smear them. And unfortunately, that's just the world we're in at the moment.
Yeah, it does. So, yeah, and like you say, let's just say, for example, he's found innocent tomorrow. Mud sticks, doesn't it? The mud's already been thrown. It's been thrown in public.
Yeah, unfortunately. And there's your first left turn, folks. I didn't expect you talking about Russell Brand and Nigel Farage when we're talking about a cashless society, but there we go.
No, but they are sort of related, and that's why I chucked him into the mix. You know, let's face it, we don't know. We don't know exactly what's gone on in either of those situations, so we can only speculate in the way that you can speculate. But we do have to ask those questions.
I think the questions that we're asking are on the back of the video that we saw initially, in terms of, can government or big business, can they control the populace or the individuals to a point where they can absolutely categorically affect their livelihood, their business, their existence, and so on and so on? And I think that's the question. And the guy, you know, the video at the start, and he said they cut off the electric bike and it caused him to have an accident, and he went over the handlebars. I would argue maybe, if they just cut off the electric because is it prepaid and therefore you only get a certain distance and you should know that, and it's not the government that cut it off, it's just the actual device itself. It's a bit like a meter. The meter's run out and therefore it stopped. So they haven't stopped it. Your payment has just stopped for that period of time. But what would have happened if he was on a road and he comes off the bike and a car hits him?
It's an interesting point, because I did wonder whether this would get questioned, because the first thing I thought when I watched it was, well, hang on a minute, surely it would just slow to a stop. It's not going to just slam the brakes on and throw him off, is it?
Well, I mean, you would assume not.
No, but...
You would assume not.
But I think something else is there at play.
But if it's a meter, and, you know, if somebody says, oh, your lights go off, oh, chuck 10 pence in the meter, you know, back in the day, because your lights just go off. There's no dimming of the lights, they just go off. Yeah. So it isn't... Yeah. I find it hard to believe that it's an on-off. I take your point. But if it is an on-off and it goes off, what happens if he's on the road?
I don't know. The concerns are still real, though.
You know what I mean?
The concerns are still real. You know, he's making a point, and like you say, he's doing it in a humorous way at first. When we see a guy falling off a bike, we all have a bit of a laugh about that. God bless him. You know, he wasn't seriously hurt, thankfully. But, you know, it's funny when people fall over and do themselves a minor mischief. It's made you've been frame popular for years. But the concern is that level of control. And the reason why I mention the likes of Russell Brand and the likes of Nigel Farage, because they are grey areas. They are polarizing characters. We might like them, we might loathe them. And do we get to decide, based on how we feel about them, whether their income should be cut off, whether their right to bank should be stopped? And, you know, and that's what makes us uncomfortable. There's a reason why I mention those characters. Lots of people love Russell Brand, lots of people loathe him. There are people out there, for whatever reason, enjoy the politics of Mr. Farage, and I'm glad to say, a vaster population that don't. Now, I don't care for Mr. Farage. I'm okay with Russell Brand. If he's done the things that he's accused of, I'm a little less comfortable with that, let's be honest. However, I think we need to assess these in terms of how the level of control is meted out, and that's what doesn't necessarily sit comfortably with me in both of those cases. And that's the reason why I mentioned them. And then we look at the likes of the social credit score in China. And truthfully, here's my question this. When we're talking about media control, do we know enough about it? Or are we just going to take the word from the Daily Mirror or the Daily Mail that this is how the social score in China works? Do we know enough about it?
It goes back, and I wasn't on the episode, and you made a comment and it went back to the Flat Earth episode. And I'd say I wasn't on the podcast, but having had a little bit of a listen back, if you don't trust the people that are telling you the stories, how can you trust the information that's coming out of the mouth? Yeah. And if you don't trust the politicians, how do you trust what they're then saying to be factually correct? We don't. Do we trust the papers? Do we trust social media? No. So why do we then make an assumption based on the information that only they're providing? And how confident are we that they're providing a balanced argument? Well, they're not, because they have their own agendas. The social media outlets, the newspapers, will have made up their own mind on Nigel Farage, on Russell Brand, and so on. And they will perpetuate their own thoughts, and they'll use their own sort of outlets to push their sort of thoughts and opinions. And if we don't trust them, and we know that they lie constantly because they do, how do we even trust what they're saying? So it goes back to that, I suppose.
It does. And I think this is just, so when he asked me the question, do I think he's innocent, yes or no? My belief that he could be, rather than going full out, you know, I gave a yes or no answer for impressed, but do I believe he could be? I believe he could be, because I don't trust the source that's telling me that he's guilty.
Yeah. And again, and that goes back to, if you don't trust the person, then how do you trust the information they're telling you, type thing. So, yeah, I believe that he could be innocent. Similarly, you know, some people say no smoke without fire and this, that, and the other. And if it's a well-known secret that he's been doing it for years and he's got away with it for years and this, that, and the other, you know. So, I don't know. I just, unless you have... And unless you're in that courtroom, I suppose, if it goes to court, if you're in that courtroom and you get the balanced argument and you get the defence putting forward their arguments as well as the prosecution, then who are we to then make an informed judgment on that?
Well, that's a valid point. It is a valid point. You know, I don't necessarily trust the government. I don't necessarily, well, I definitely don't trust the media, that's for sure. But do I trust the judicial system? I think I have enough faith in that still. That I would trust it. Does it get it wrong from time to time? No doubt that it does, and hopefully those wrongs do get righted. But yeah, I think I have enough faith in the British judicial system, for the most part, to say that, yeah, I would be comfortable with any decision made by that. Have you got anything to add to this thorny issue, Dave, or are you keeping quiet for a damn good reason?
No, I haven't really, because you've said it all, particularly with people like Russell Brand. It's impossible to know the truth. That's what courts are for. And some people are going to get tarnished for life, irrespective of their innocence. But I did have a question for you both. When did the half penny go out of circulation?
The half penny? Well, okay. It was in my lifetime.
It was in it was in my lifetime then as well. So it didn't happen between the 7th and the 21st of July on any given year. So I'm gonna say...
I mean, just to say it happened in your lifetime, given that decimalisation was in 1972, that's hardly a stroke of genius to come up with that one.
Dave, were we correct?
Yes, I think decimalisation was 71, but that's by the by. I'm going to say 1981.
I'm going to say earlier than that. I'm going to say 79.
It was 1984. And that's exactly, which is very topical.
Big brother.
But... Just to stick with the theme of money and circulation, just because I think that's the name of the episode, what are the two main reasons that there was opposition to taking 1p's and 2p's out of circulation? Do you know what they are?
1p's and 2p's out of circulation. Go on.
Blackjacks, you know, and mojos, penny chews or whatever? No, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, surely inflation's one, so when somebody's 97p, it's going to get rounded up to a pound.
It's not inflation. It's basically charities, for one. They get a lot of their money from the small loose change. And the second is a lot of small retailers, in particular, small shops and market stores, when they're selling something for $3.99, $4.99, $2.95. Well, you know this happened for a retail background.
Yeah.
A lot of people will see $3.99 as £3, and a lot of people will see it as £4. But a lot of people will see it as you know, quite a bit lower than it actually is. And there's a fear that small businesses will lose sales because of that. That's the only reason. So it doesn't really serve any purpose. And if you're going to get rid of cash, you should start there. But once you start that, then how long to the 5p and then the 10p? And then, you know, then you get that cashless society much quicker, don't you?
No, it's interesting that. And here's the thing. So we've talked about charity as well there a little bit. So the only, if I've ever got cash in my pocket, you know, if I'm going past a homeless person, they'll have it. You know what I mean? They can have some of the cash out of my pocket, no worries. But because I so rarely do it now, what I'll generally do is nip it and buy a sandwich or something. But
For the homeless person, not just
eating from him. Yeah, nice.
Cheese and pickle, delightful. But no, you know, so I'll donate that way. But in terms of, there's a lady who sells the big issue outside Asda and all such. I ain't bought a big issue in years because I've never got any cash on me. And that's, you know, that is a challenge. You know, how do people like that survive? How do they, you know, it's gonna be those people, if they were to get rid of cash, how do they survive? Because let's face it, I'm not being funny, I'm not being distrustful of the homeless community in general, but if all of a sudden they popped up with a reader, I used to give a card on that.
I don't think you're likely to see a homeless person. You might see a big issue seller.
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, but you're unlikely to see a genuine homeless person with a card reader, because it's not going to happen, is it?
No, but they ain't. I've looked into it, to be fair. You know, when we've toyed with the idea and something with Tallboy Radio, taking it to a trade fair or something like that, doing an episode from there, maybe selling some tats while we're there. I've looked at how much it costs to actually get some of those card readers. Pretty cheap, to be honest with you. And, you know, on the basis of that, I invested in a new wallet, actually, which is like ARFID, like proof so that you can't, can't just scan me pocket and get me money for whatever that's worth. But those folks who really are sort of on the fringes of society in terms of their financial power, like the homeless, you know, they must be impacted by the lack of cash that's been carried, surely.
I've got no doubt, absolutely no doubt. And it's slightly ironic, you know, I mentioned earlier that we'd gone to Leicester and I'd used cash to pay, and it was about half an hour after, 45 minutes after, we were sort of walking back, and ladies sort of walked past, so have you got any cash? You know, you're clearly homeless. Can you spare a pound? And literally I said, she must have thought, yeah, right. And I said, literally, I've just spent it. I haven't got any on me. And she must have thought, yeah, pull the other one. And genuinely, I hadn't got any, because I'd literally just spent it like half an hour before on some coffees or whatever. But that was somebody that, you know, would I give them a 50p, a quid or whatever? Yeah. Would the next person down? Don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you genuinely don't carry cash, then
that's it.
That crosses over to the charity as well, doesn't it? You know, when people are shaking a bucket, you lose change. If you haven't got it, then you haven't got it. So, you know, I mean, I was in Norwich at the weekend, and there were some charity stalls, and they had card readers, but it seemed to be more organised. It was outside a public library, and they had stalls and stands, so it was a more organised charity event rather than just, you know, hanging around with buckets. But it must have the stats are probably out there. A quick Google will probably tell you that charities have a big decline in donations because of the fact that people don't carry cash.
Indeed, yeah, it's interesting that. And it is interesting. Like I say, just recently I bought the poppies and stuff for the kids, so you know what I mean? But obviously they put, you know, I want this, I want that. Well, fair enough. But they had it's still donation-based, but you can do it like via your card. And that's all well and good for people, you know, who is the British Legion, as it provide the poppies. It's great for them that they can do that. They're a large organisation, and that's wonderful. But like you say, the smaller charities and the people who are asking for charity and asking for help, these people are going to be impacted by cash itself. And the question then would be, do we do enough for them? To if we were to get rid of cash, would that mean that we, for us to get rid of cash, we would have to make sure that these people were okay? Because that's largely how they're surviving.
But is it not in our remit, and people will disagree with me on this, but is it not in our remit currently, even with a cashless society, to make sure that these people are okay?
Oh yeah, it is. So do we do enough?
You open the question, and as you've just said there, Adam, you know, do we currently do enough? Well, clearly the answer is no, because there's obviously a number of homeless people around. Do we do enough for charity? The answer is no, clearly. So I suppose the question is not, do we do enough if there's a cashless society? I think the question is actually, do we do enough currently, even with cash in our society? And
we don't.
The probably answer to both of those questions is no.
No, we don't. We don't. But I do think, you know, in terms of, like you say, for example, you know, when we've been down to London, you know, we got a little bit of cash in us, then, August.
and you know we'll go buy a few beers and you know we'll get grab something to eat without cash.
Right, here's a question for you then. Just before you're gonna say,
go on.
If you went into Asda in Alsatia, you pay on your card, and you get the option of donating to charity.
Yeah,
and I don't know who their charity is, but you get the option of a penny, 5 pence, 10 pence, a pound, or whatever it is. And I don't. If locally, each of the Asdas, Tesco's, Sainsbury's, Lidl's, et cetera, if they then said, well, actually, if you donate, that's going to homeless people in Alsatia, and it was a local-based charity, do you think people would be more willing to then give a donation, albeit only a penny or 2 pence, and that goes to a local charity? Because in effect, that's the same as seeing a homeless person walking around your local village you've given them cash.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting point, though, because a lot of the time I go to pay in Asda, and it'll say, do you want to donate the different amounts to this charity? I don't know what the charity is either. You know, and I don't think of the charity. I think of Asda and think, fuck you, Asda. You made billions last year. I didn't. Why don't you give some money?
And I'm sure they do. I'll just play the straight guy to Adam's. You know, I'm sure Asda do lots of work for charity and lots of charitable events, but I couldn't tell you who the charity is that Asda support. But if you went and paid on your card and it came up and it said, please, would you like to donate? Please choose from one of the three local charities below, and you clicked on the screen, because you can do that. You click on the screen and it could be, I don't know, the round table, the Allsatia round tables, the Samaritans, the whatever it may be locally, the Lions Club, whatever it may be. And then how much do you want? Do you think people will be more prepared to do that because it's local?
Do you know, it's an interesting point, dude. And truthfully, yeah, I think so.
And therefore, why we're not doing it?
It's a very good question. That is a very good
question.
The
fact from an organizational commercial level, they might donate to, I'm going to say Bernardo's, I don't think it is them, but Bernardo's, for example. But if, as an individual consumer, so corporate level, Bernardo's is their sponsor and they will work with Bernardo's in partnership with or whatever. But at a local level, if you provided local customers to their local store the opportunity to support local charities, do you think people will be more willing to do so?
I think potentially. Don't get me wrong, Bernardo's and all the other charities out there, they all do wonderful work. But again, when you speak to people about donating to charity, you know, and these people and charities are now a bit run like businesses, because they have to be. And then to be running the right way, they need to have a figurehead who's going to take it in that direction. And that guy ain't going to do it for free, so he wants paid. And then there's a little bit you think, right, I'll talk with £2.50 in your pocket. But at the end of the day, a portion of that is going to pay for some dude to live in a bigger house than me. I've got a problem with people living in bigger houses than me. I have no issues at all. But it's going to pay for somebody to live in a nice lifestyle, because they get paid big bucks for running those charities. I'm not saying they don't earn it. I'm not saying they don't deserve it. But I'm not 100% comfortable with where that income comes from, wholly. David?
I've just had a quick Google. Asda have a communities charity where they do donations and support local communities directly, but their national stuff is split between Children and Eden Tickled Pink, which is a breast cancer charity.
Right, okay.
And we did run Asda's benefits website for a while, and we built into there the option for their employees to donate into those charities, so they do support it amongst their workforce and externally to their customers. But I absolutely agree that if you thought it was going locally, you're more likely to do it, because you think first a lot of the time. Now, there's people around the world that are in a lot worse position. But you still tend to think, if you're helping locally, you would do that. You might then still do whatever charity donation you do to support something further afield.
That's interesting, Dave. And to be fair, I feel quite guilty for not donating, because those are two pretty damn good charities, which I would align.
But I don't think we get the option. And I think that's my point, is that, you know, Dave mentioned there that, you know, the two charities that they support from an organisational corporate point of view. I when you get to their EPOS system and you're putting your card in and this, that and the other, we don't get the local option, and we're not told that. So on that screen, who was the first one, Dave? So was it Pretty in Pink, and what was the first one?
Tickled in Pink and Children in Need.
Children in Need.
Breast cancer, Tickled in Pink.
So if it's Children in Need, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're a fantastic charity, and I wholeheartedly support the work that they do. But I don't get the option on their EPOS system of going, I want to support the Osage Alliance, and I'm going to give 5p to the Osage Alliance or 10p to the Osage Alliance, because I think I would do that because I know that the money that they generate will go into the local community. Yeah. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't support, you know, the Children Eating Pretty in Pink and all that. I'm not saying that. No. I just think I would be more likely to donate if I knew it was going locally.
Well, especially, and we'll say this, I've not heard a comment from him. I might have to check in with Stuart, make sure he's well. He's not commented on the last couple of episodes. But given what Stuart told us about the way that cash is generated for people who are moving blood around and like being first responders, you know, the likes of the Lions that raise money for them, yeah, I think that certainly is a good cause. So we're cropping up now, round about the hour mark. Hello, Mike Gray. Thank you for saying hello to us. Looking forward to guesting on your podcast on the 9th of December, which is going to be for charity, a charity based in Kentucky. I forget what it is, but I've retweeted it. So check out our Twitter at Tallboy Radio very, very recently so you can find out what it is that they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, Mike. Yeah, looking forward to coming on to your event, and I hope that the plans and the preparations are all going well, and look forward to seeing you there. Oh, the Kentucky Humane Society. Thanks, Mike. We'll give a shout out to them as well.
Indeed we will. Yeah, quite right. Yeah, the Kentucky Humane Society. So yeah, very good, very good, very good. So we are coming up to round about the hour mark, so we're going to wrap it up. So we really have gone down some rabbit holes now, not necessarily all the ones that we intended to, but nonetheless we're going to catch them bunnies and string them up, and that's probably what we should be doing with the government, but that's another matter. So I'm not a big fan of the Conservative Party. Local by-elections just recently, we've sort of seen that there's been a swing in the way of Labour. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Labour Party is any better. So, folks, let's leave it. Let's leave a message. Let's leave a message for the politicians and ask them to do something for us. And let's tell them what it is that they should be doing for us. What is it that we want? What are our fears for the future?
God, that's a bit of a broad question, isn't it?
It's a very broad question.
It's a broad question considering we've got 52, 51, 50 seconds left.
I would just say on the swing to Labour vote, you bear in mind that it's more that the Conservative voters didn't turn up. Labour didn't really get any more votes than they did before.
But people are choosing not to vote for the Conservative Party. And don't get me wrong, I totally understand that. I can't abide them. But I'm not convinced Labour are any better. What are we asking? What are we looking for in the future? You know, when we look at cash, do we want to see cash expunged from us?
I think for the reasons that I spoke about earlier in terms of the smaller business, the promoting the independent, promoting entrepreneurship and small businesses and independent traders and all of that, I think there has to be incentives. If we are going to go cashless, there would have to be more incentives for smaller businesses. So I don't know, a reduction in transaction fees, a complete, you know, abolishment of transaction fees potentially. I know that might not necessarily work, because for every small independent trader, you've then got the middleman. You go, well, what about me? I need to put in my money as well, and all. And I get that, But I would like to see support for smaller businesses in terms of the transaction fees. That's what I'd like.
Dave, any final thoughts?
Well, I think one thing we didn't touch on was the difficulty older people have with credit cards, debit cards, online banking. Some people just want to go down the village with the money they drew out of the post office for their pension and actually just go and buy some, you know, some goods. And it might be the market, it might be Asda. And I think whilst COVID accelerated the shift from cash in small retailers to digital, because they just had to because of COVID, it didn't accelerate people getting older. People are still getting older at the same rate. So all those people that were, you know, that are, you know, probably as low as in their 60s, they might have grown up for most of their life not having to use debit and credit cards. And there'll be people that, you know, particularly their 70s and their 80s, that, you know, probably still don't have credit or debit cards. And if they do have them, they're terrified of them and they don't want to use it, and they just want to hand over a £10 note and get their change. But, you know, that is shifting, and over time, and it's not a huge amount of time. You're probably only looking at 10 or 15 years as those older people, you know, die off and the younger generations come through. There's less and less people that aren't tech first, and there's more and less businesses that aren't, you know, using mobile technical tech payment methods, because a lot of them shifted in COVID. All new businesses are going to do that. All the businesses are going to shut down as they retire. So I think it's probably inevitable. And people, anyone that uses online payments already is already tracked, you know, massively. So anything you do is tracked, and companies can access your data with your consent, and they can see every transaction you've made and where you've made it and how much it was for. That's not going away. That's just going to get more and more. So I don't think you've got a choice. You're going to have to, if you're going to live in countries like ours, which are broadly democratic and open, then there's only one way it's going to end up, and it's not going to be too long in the future.
No, I think you're right. I mean, you're right. Cash is no longer king. I think data is king. You know, information is king. That's the way it is. It's been that way for a while. It's getting more open. But I think for me, I would just say, always look at what's being suggested. Look at what the way forward is. Look at the people who are telling you what the way forward is and ask what they gain from it. That's always been my concern. I've seen things over the last 3-4 years that concern me the way things are going. I understand progress. I understand information technology, and I understand how important information is. But I just have a fear that the people who are doling it out, I don't necessarily trust them. But I don't trust that they have our best interests at hand. So with that in mind, would we like to say our goodbyes on this deep, dark Halloween where we delved into the depths of the bowels of the Conservative Party?
Yeah, one of that. Thanks for that. One or two left turns, but sort of loosely sort of strung together. I find it, you know, fascinating. First of all, you know, it felt as though it's been a while since the sort of just three of us have been on together. So thoroughly enjoyed tonight. Obviously no guest tonight, but thoroughly enjoyed just the three of us sort of chewing the fat as such. Where we go, who knows? And as you said, you know, where will we go when the beer flows? Who knows, sort of thing. And I think that's pretty much the catchphrase for this podcast is we don't know. All we can do is hopefully go along for the ride. Can we influence where that ride goes? Probably not. Can we just steady the ship along the ride? Yeah, probably. So yeah, look forward to the next time. No doubt we'll venture into the depths of some form of something or other, whatever that may be.
The deep dark bowels of Manchester Bane.
Yeah, the deep dark bowels of whatever you want to talk about. So yeah, enjoyed it and look forward to the next time.
Dave?
Yeah, as Gaz said, it's been good actually just to have the three of us together to bang things around. And I think we should probably do an extended edition on election night, because I think you're right, Adam, that not enough people want to vote for Conservative and not enough people will vote for Labour. It's going to be extremely low turnout. God knows what's going to happen, because it's probably going to be hung and that's going to be a disaster. And we also need to do an episode that's just titled, because it's kind of where we went with this, but you know, titled something like Who Can You Trust? ?
Yeah, that's it. Certainly not Talbot Radio.
Not many.
No, Dave, I like the idea of the politics episode. We will do that. General election night, I will get my swingometer out and we will... we will do that. We will do a watch along as we watch the Tories fall and then commiserate when Labour get in and we realise actually they're really, really no better.
Don't give yourselves to brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines, you are not cattle, you are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world. that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason, a world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy,